Needless to say, I've never broke a bone in my body, and that day I broke 9.
I am your host, Zach Weaver, and this is Made Us. My guest this week is fellow tattooer Chuck Schmidt. Chuck and I sat down and talked about a little bit of everything, from parenthood to the current elections to having critiques that make you want to end your career. We end up running the gambit of topics on today's episode. But one thing is for sure, the main topic of today is staying humble. And that's something Chuck has really taken to heart. Once again, I gotta say, I appreciate everybody listening to this show. And if you like what you've been hearing on Made Us, go into Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star rate and review, and share the show with a friend. And if you don't listen to Apple Podcasts, subscribe in your favorite podcast app. You can also keep up with us on social media at facebook.com/madeuspodcast and Instagram and Twitter at madeuspodcast. And if you have a guest suggestion for the show, drop us a line at madeuspodcast@hotmail.com. So I have to say, sitting down with Chuck tonight was a great time, and I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. So please help me welcome Chuck Schmidt. Chuck, thanks for joining me tonight.
I'm so happy to be here.
Dude, I'm stoked to have you here.
Dude, I've been looking forward to this. Almost ruined it, but I'm so looking forward to this.
Nah, dude, you're good. You're good, man. So for the listeners that are hearing this, today's election day.
Yes.
And I have the stupidest things that I think about. So like one of them was, who the fuck are these people voting no on Prop 1?
I have no clue. I feel like there's a lot of positive things that are going to come out of it. But funny story, though, just real quick. I go to Niles Township, go to vote, right? Walk into the place. A lot of older people, you know? So I walk in, you know, tattooed up, got my vest on, got some pants on, you know, just, you know, a little edgy. And almost everybody turns around. The first lady there looks at me and she goes, so happy you're here. By the way, proposal 1's on the back. And I'm like, are you serious? That's how it is, you know, like,
yeah.
So I was speechless. I just, they had these markings on the floor, and that's how I got around. Yeah. I didn't even look at people anymore. I just looked at like voting area, little, you know, thing, laminated little poster. And then this is the area where you put your ballot in and everything. So I was like, I didn't want to look at anybody.
Yeah, I can imagine. I thought about that today because I don't smoke weed. I don't do any of that stuff. Yeah. And for anybody listening out of state, we live in Michigan. Michigan Prop 1 is legalizing recreational marijuana, which I'm all for because we're going to get a huge tax benefit from this.
Absolutely. And not just that, it's law enforcement.
Yeah.
Law enforcement, we're using taxpayers' money for a drug that really isn't doing much. You know, I mean, we talked to a couple of police officers and they're more worried about the rise of DUIs. But other than that, they're not, you know, people that are doing drug enforcement are going to be, you know, raiding houses for 3 ounces of weed. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's going to be on the wayside. Plus the massive benefits to taxes for, you know, I believe I read 10% is going to be taxed off the top. And on top of licensing for facilities that are going to have the drug. So, you know, we have road issues, we have school issues, we have all sorts of stuff that the money can be used to help the state of Michigan.
Yeah, for sure. And then the other thing that I brought up today, my biggest political rant of the whole day, and I don't rant about politics, I don't even talk about politics. Since I've been voting, I've voted in 3 different cities, and I've got the same lame-ass sticker every fucking time. I get this one, like I see on Facebook, you have a cooler sticker than I have.
Well, I've been stalking people on Facebook today and seeing who voted and who didn't. Not that I'm like, you know, that guy, but I was like, man, some people had little square ones that were cooler than mine. You know, it's almost like you can collect these things.
Yeah.
You know, go from voting booth to voting booth.
So many people had cool stickers.
Grabbing these things up.
I know that's the stupidest thing to be mad about.
No, I understand.
But I voted in 3 different cities in my voting lifetime. And everyone gave me this stupid, lame, white sticker that says I voted.
Yeah.
And I see all these people that have cool stickers, and it aggravates me.
Yeah. It's almost like they got to step up your area. You know what I'm saying? Like, almost they're letting you down as a whole in the state of Michigan. You know, like, we got to step up our sticker game, guys, you know?
So that sexy voice you hear across from me today is Chuck Schmidt. He is another tattooer who's a friend of mine. And I'll have you introduce yourself a little bit here.
Hi, my name is Chuck. I'm the owner of the Parlor Tattooing in Eau Claire. It was prior in St. Joseph, and we moved it to Eau Claire, but I own it and tattoo there, and I also pierce there.
Nice.
And a happy father of 2, a little girl, Charlie, and she's 4, and Silas will be 5 months on the 8th.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Newborn.
Yes, newborn. It's you forget it, man. It's you go 4 years and you're like, this little person becomes sort of self-reliant and you're like, yes, man, like,
yeah,
they're going to the restroom by themselves, they can put their clothes on, and then you reintroduce a whole new little thing and you forget, like, diapers, man, and you forget all that stuff and you're like, what do we do?
Yeah, it's tough, man. I say this week in and week out, and I know my listeners are probably tired of hearing me say it because I say it week in and week out. Like, I can't imagine having another child right now.
No. You know those people that have like 3, 4, or 5 kids and you're like, dude, how do you do it? I mean, now it's sort of nicer because with Charlie, she's grabbing diapers. And those little 5-10 second things add up a lot in the day, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So you just have her like, here, go throw this diaper away or go give me some new wipes or something. And you're like, you know, it's sort of like nice, you know, you're almost like pampered in a way. But no, it's she's been a lot of help.
Yeah, it's nice when the bigger kid can help.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes.
I don't know what I'd do now. Man, I'd be screwed. I don't want to do it again.
No, I'm done. I got snipped, my wife's decision.
Yeah.
Did you see the picture?
I did. That was hilarious.
Yeah, it was awesome experience. We go to the doctor and we're sitting there. He notices and sort of recognizes Sarah from the hospital. She's a nurse. And they're talking and he keeps looking at her like, I know you. I know you from somewhere. But he's still talking about the process, what's going to happen, healing times and everything like that. And he goes, you're a nurse, right? And she's like, yeah. And he goes, you want to do it? And she's like, do what? He's like, do the vasectomy. And dude, it was an ABC conversation that immediately turned to an AB conversation. He's like, or she's like, how long is it going to take? And he's like, 30 minutes. But if we're having a really good time, 20 minutes. And I thought it was a giant joke. But sure enough, you know, when it happened, it like she was doing stuff. Like,
that's craziness. Yeah.
But, you know, it's just like the right thing. Like, if anybody's going to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Know, it's gonna be right. So we actually are already planned it. It's coming up. We are doing a episode literally about that.
That's awesome.
It's going to be a vasectomy roundtable.
That is amazing.
Yeah. I've had one. I have a couple friends that will be on the show. I don't want to spoil who's going to be on the show, but I have a couple friends that have had them. It's a good time. We've all got ridiculous stories.
That's
honestly
awesome.
You sound like you need to be on too because your story is pretty ridiculous.
Well, like I said, it was a whole new thing. It was... I mean, even the walk out, it was like, you know, do you know what I'm saying? You can be at the urology clinic and you walk into that back room and everybody in that room from the walk knows exactly what just happened. You know what I'm saying? The waddle. And Sarah's like, so embarrassed. She's like, Charles, seriously, stop. Don't walk like that. And like, you know, you can't help it.
Yeah, it's just you're like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Your legs are stints. You don't bend at the knee anymore and you walk like, you know, a waddle. So no, but it was a wild experience. It was wild.
So was she all about doing it?
Oh, she set it up.
Yeah.
She set everything up. She had everything ready to go. I didn't have to do much. She had the thing set up, was it 5 weeks before Silas was here? 4 after, you know, getting everything ready.
So she was ready to go.
Yeah, she was ready to go.
She's like, you ain't doing this shit to me again.
No, she was done. It was done. It was, it wasn't going to happen again.
Oh, that's funny, man. Well, I'm glad you're here to join me.
Same here.
I know you got an experience you want to talk about that takes place out of town here.
Yeah, it was, it's a tough story. It was, it actually helped me as a tattoo artist, or in general as everything, but, I was about my second, maybe third year of tattooing. I just opened the shop, the parlor in St. Joe, and, we went as a group, to Vegas. You know, we were having a great time, went to the Flamingo Hotel, we were going to, Cirque du Soleil shows. It was a great time. I mean, we were out, we hadn't had vacation in years.
Is that the first time you guys been to Vegas?
Yeah, it was the first time.
I have still not been there.
Seriously?
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's just one of those things where like you just, there's like tourist traps.
Yeah.
And then there's like for example, Old Vegas, which was amazing, you know, but yeah, we went to, you know, we were there and the ladies always wanted to go poolside in the morning.
Yeah.
It was a poolside thing, you know? So we go poolside and we meet some guys, some fellow tattoo artists there, you know? Talking about tattoos, and you know, I'm excited about the new shop.
Were you just out there for vacation, or was it tattoo related?
Nope, just vacation. Just, you know, like I said, we hadn't had a vacation in forever, so we just wanted to go out there and just like let some steam out, you know, and just relax. And unfortunately, that completely turned around on me. We met some people there, some fellow tattoo artists, and I told them I had just created this super primitive website. I mean, it was like, if you can imagine MySpace. And a website. It was terrible. Like, it was like, there was no finesse about it. It was just like, here's a button, click it, and here's my portfolio, you know? So that night, I had these things set up on the website where you could literally write a comment, and then it would pop up as a notification to me.
Okay.
And so all of a sudden, I'm laying in bed. It's like midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, and I get these notifications like start pouring on my phone about the website. And so I'm like, whatever. No, didn't think anything of it. And I go look and I start reading these things out. And this is basically how it went. First picture, it was like, you scratch your piece of shit. Your work is absolutely terrible. Next one's like, this is scratchy work and line work's shit. It was, dude, it was, I had 30, 40 pictures on there and every single one was destroyed. I mean, like,
really
destroyed. Like, I mean, like, you couldn't do much more worse than that. I mean, I'm saying it was just like, they just went on there, the guys that I met poolside, and just looked at my work. And Preston was working with me at the time, and they looked at his, and they're like, this is the guy who should be running the place because his work's way better. Dude, it destroyed me. Like, I didn't sleep that night.
Yeah.
The next day, Sarah immediately knew something was wrong. We split up, like, the couples, and we went to sushi that night. And I didn't eat. Like, Sarah was looking at me, she's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And yeah. I couldn't even, like... Dude, it was like something imploded and you get that ringing noise. It was like that day. But after that, it snapped me out because at that time, I was like on cloud nine, really.
Yeah.
You know, I had just started the shop. You know, at that point, I looked at my work and it was like, my shit doesn't stink.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
It's hard. I've been in that exact same place, maybe not to the same extent, but I do remember I had a couple critiques early on from people that would like look at my work and they said stuff to me that I was just like, I'm done. I don't even know if I want to do this anymore.
No, it was literally, I was on the plane back with the new shop open. I was like, do I keep this place open?
Yeah.
Am I cut out for this? Am I going to do this? And I got back and you know, you put in the grind, you keep your head down. And at that point, that day, you know, you always look to the future like this is going to go away.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just going to work my best and it's going to go away. And of course it went away. But dude, from that day on, I humbled myself. And I looked at every piece like trying to find something wrong with it. You know what I'm saying? And trying new things to create, you know, better lines, cleaner lines, new, you know, new needles, new blacks, new colors. You know what I'm saying? Just to try different things because I basically plateaued.
Yeah.
And like I said, I wasn't going to improve if that didn't happen. And it actually seriously helped me out tremendously. Now, no, you don't go to somebody's website and trash them out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's pretty shitty. Even... I don't know that I would ever go out of my way to really like dog somebody.
Right.
That's just never been my personality.
Right.
Now, I have definitely gave people critiques.
Sure.
Solid critiques. No, real critiques.
No, and critiques are good.
But when they're asked for.
Right. Right. No, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, that's a big thing. And it doesn't matter what it is. You know, we tattoo. We both tattoo. Yeah. And it's not necessarily just tattooing. It's any walk of life, whatever it may
be. Oh, absolutely.
You know, if you're in a profession or whatever it is, hobby.
Yes.
You know, you want those critiques, but they need to be constructive. They don't need to be like destroying you.
Right, right. You know, and you know, even good critiques, something about critiques, sometimes people ask a critique for no reason.
Yeah.
A lot of times they want some attention to something that they've been doing for a long time. And they're like, hey, and then they get a critique and they take it the wrong way, you know?
Yeah.
And again, it's just, you have to be open to everything. You know, even to this day, if I got a critique, I would not take it to heart. I wouldn't. I would just work harder to fix whatever I had to do. And like I said, every tattoo, you know, I don't want to say this, it sounds sort of messed up on, you know, saying it out loud, but I do try to find something wrong in every tattoo.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to be naive and think, oh, every tattoo is perfect.
Yeah.
And I can safely say to this day, right now, I've never done a perfect tattoo.
I tell people every day that there's no such thing as a perfect tattoo.
Absolutely.
There just honestly is no such thing as a perfect tattoo. No matter how good it is, there's absolutely always a flaw in it.
There's always a flaw.
And it's a handcraft. It doesn't matter who's done the tattoo.
That's right.
The biggest names could do a tattoo. The best tattoo artist in the world could do a tattoo.
That's
there's
right.
always a flaw there's, in it somewhere.
Absolutely.
Because it's a handcraft.
That's right.
It's never going to be perfect.
That's right.
Now, that doesn't mean it can't be really good.
Right.
That doesn't mean it can't be hidden.
Right.
You know?
Right. Right.
I joke about it a lot, but it was serious. For probably the first 2 years that I tattooed, I didn't know how I was going to shade a tattoo.
Oh.
Till I was done outlining, because I was so poor at outlining that it was like I had to figure out where I had to hide the bad spots. So I never knew how I was going to shade anything until I was done outlining.
That's how it is. It's always, you know, even to this day, you know, you make a stencil a little too thick, you know, and you're running a line into another line, and then you wipe that stencil away and you actually went past that line,
yeah.
You know, then it's like, okay, let's fix it. You know what I'm saying?
Let's
sculpt some lines. Let's fix some stuff up. Let's add some shading where, you know, maybe it wouldn't have been before, but
yeah.
But like I said, every tattoo I get done with it and I just stare at it and I try to improve. But dude, I'm telling you what, It sounds rough, but man, if it wasn't for that night, I probably would have been a whole different person today.
Yeah.
I would have been at that point where like, it just would have been one of those things where I just would have done the same stuff, the same kind of, you know, shading techniques, the same kind of equipment, you know.
Yeah.
I was, you know, in my apprenticeship, I was basically taught to use a lot of old school stuff, you know what I'm saying? And if I stuck with that, you know, my first machine, which by the way, I went all wrong about it, is I got a machine that was a good machine, but it wasn't the machine for me, you know. Yeah. I got a Dringenberg, and those machines run heavy lines and stuff for old traditional tattoos. I didn't do traditional tattoos. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I sculpted my lines. I did that stuff. So starting out, I'm blowing things out. I'm cutting into people. You know what I'm saying? I'm doing all the wrong stuff. And I'm like, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah.
You know, instead of looking out at other tattooers and be like, that's what I want to do with his style. And what is he using? You know?
Yeah.
And so, like I said, every day I just wake up and try to humble myself. It's hard. But I try to humble myself and try to improve everything I'm doing.
Oh, absolutely. It makes sense. And that night when you got those messages laying in bed, I mean, what was going through your head with that?
Man, I seriously wanted to start crying.
Yeah.
Dude, I just wanted to like I said, we just spent a small fortune getting the shop going. My dad was helping me out financially too because, you know, we were eating ramen noodles, man, like almost every night. You know, it was hard, man, just to get the funds together and do everything we needed to do and get the shop running. And, you know, the more time the place isn't open, it's not making you money, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
And which was great because we had a small crew, literally a friend just helping us put the place together. But all that comes back that night. You know what I'm saying? All the money you just spent. And you're like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
You know, I can't do it. And then, of course, you know, you have Sarah, my wife. She was so supportive. She's like, don't worry. And then I'm like, no, because my wife, as sweet as she is, she sort of is one of those things where like, I'll show her a tattoo and she's like, sweetheart, that's so great.
Yeah.
And I'm like, babe, come on.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Now. Come on. You know, like critique it. Tell me what, you know, and she can't. It's almost like a thing where like it's not allowed. She's just like super supportive no matter what. But yeah, man, I paced the room. I turned the AC and the heat on and off for no reason. Like I turned the water on to take a shower and I didn't take a shower.
Oh,
like
geez.
It was, man, it was brutal. But again, if it wasn't that brutal, I still wouldn't feel it today. And I still feel it today. You know what I'm saying? That's definitely one of those things that helped, as crazy as it sounds, it helped me to be who I, like I said, imagine if I didn't, I would be doing the same stuff.
Yeah.
I probably would have improved something, but I wouldn't be looking at my work, you know, as I'd be like, oh, this is great, guys, or I don't get why you're upset, or, you know what I'm saying? Like,
how long did you actually take to like digest that and to kind of see, as far as you heard that, you saw those comments, how long did it take you to digest it and be like, oh, I really need to do something about this?
So basically, when I had the website up, even though I wanted to literally take it down that night.
Yeah.
Like, one, it's embarrassing as shit. You know what I'm saying? You got like all these comments, and the thing is, you couldn't really delete them. Or I don't know if I remember how to delete them. You're just like, oh shit, oh, this is terrible. One, this is a dig on me, and then now like, you know, maybe the people that got these tattoos are on there, and they're like, oh shit, here's some other people. You know?
Yeah.
I kept the site up and the comments up. It took maybe 6 or 7 months, and I went back to the website from that 6 months of just like grinding away, like keeping my head down, trying new things, you know, always trying to find the negative in the tattoos and trying to improve the next one. I looked back at the tattoos, and sure enough, man, I was like, this is garbage.
Yeah.
You know, like I was like, and again, it, you know, people that I tattoo listening, that's the thing, is like when I first started out, it's what it is. You know, I was not as good as I am now, and I'm not good. I'm not even to the point where I'm happy. I'm always trying to improve. You know, every single tattoo I look at, I see, you know, those lines where you're like, you think, oh, I got an extra inch on this line. I can pull this line. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then you're at that last inch and you got that wobble. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
You know, and you're like, man, I'm just literally just told myself this morning, I'm like, dude, do the best that you can. And so I look back at those tattoos and I'm like, no shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, this is, and it opens you up. Like I said, my head was in a cloud. I could do no wrong. And sure enough, man. And so, like I said, it honestly, I could say it saved my career.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus, and I definitely won't name names. But I think some of that too is the way you were brought into tattooing, the way you were brought up, knowing kind of the mentorship that you had. I kind of see that a lot in them. As far as that, not believing that they have anything wrong.
Right. Well, like I said, even in my apprenticeship, it was one of those things where like, these are the needles we have. For example, we had a, I think we had a 9-round liner, traditional, not tight. We had a 13 mag, a 7 mag, and maybe another liner. And that's what everybody used.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? There weren't options. I went 2 years and you're like, these are the options. Okay. These are the options.
Yeah.
Here's my Drinchenberg. This is what I shade my line with. And you go through those things and you're just like, oh, what am I, you know, well, okay, this is great. And then, like I said, you see the same stuff with the same materials, the same equipment, and you're like, well, this is how it is. And then you get, like I said, it just becomes so redundant. You're like, well, I'm doing a good job. I'm doing a good job.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, the shop was doing well, even, you know, and I think it was just the massive, you know, like support we had from starting out that sort of mask that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was, they weren't, I don't think they were coming to me because of how good I was doing. I think they're coming to me because I just had good friends. You
yeah.
know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Which is also a great thing.
No,
that happened, because a lot of those tattoos are really good friends. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, the thing that I see with you too, and I mean this in the best way possible, is, dude, you're a really lovable guy. I see why people came to you, regardless of your skill level at the beginning, regardless of that, like, you're a lovable guy. You've become a really good tattooer. But I've always heard this before, that people would rather get tattooed by somebody that makes them happy, makes them feel good, than somebody that's an asshole.
No, that's, I hear that.
You know, and during those time periods at the beginning of your career, when you weren't necessarily doing the best tattoos,
right.
which it's not just you, none of us did good tattoos at the beginning of our career.
Like I said, I was, mine were terrible.
But you're such a lovable guy that I can understand why people gave you that support at the beginning.
Well, we're in the process of actually starting Stephanie Guitar, but she's going to be one of our apprentices. And that's, I was literally thinking the other day, that's what we have to talk about. You know, a lot of people don't talk about that in an apprenticeship. They're talking about, like, how to talk to clients, how to price things, stuff like that. Then you go to sterilization and stuff like that, and then start turning the art, you know, into something that you apply as a tattoo. And then I wanted to tell her this, is if you treat your clients with respect, and you got to think this, your clients are coming in terrified. I get tattooed and I'll pace the shop and get all sweaty.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Your clients are coming in terrified. If you just give them a huge smile, treat them with respect, and then tell them everything's going to be okay, that's step number one. And then if you cater to their needs, like, you know, you talk to them about whatever they want to talk about, you know, remember things the next time they come up about vacations and stuff like that. That, like you said, will literally carry through you a bad tattoo.
Yeah.
They're like, well, I don't care. Stephanie was amazing. You know, yep. I'm not worried about this tattoo, you know? And you're right. I think it was just like, we had good clients and they just were kept coming back. And like I said, I think that's what carried us through. We thank God that's what carried us through the first couple of years. Because like I said, Sarah and I, the first year with all the stuff coming through and stuff like that, and bills and first starting out licensing and all that stuff to the state, you're just like, we're broke.
Yeah.
You know,
it's tough. So it was really tough.
Yeah, it was tough. So right now it's good. Everything's good. Everything's great.
So how do you think that kind of transitioned into your day-to-day life?
I don't want to say it again, but again, it's just humility. Like I said, I find myself all day long just doing things that aren't humble at all. You know what I'm saying? Like, and then I got to put myself in check and be like, listen, dude, like, you're nobody. Like,
yeah.
You know, you got to treat people kind, and you know, it just, I don't know, it's just this day and age with Facebook and stuff like that. It's just like, it's just, I want to be a negative Nancy. And then you just like, dude, just chill the fuck out. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I don't know what it is. It's just like, I don't know if it's my character or what, but it's just got to humble myself. You know, like everything I do, I try to do the best that I can. And then you want people to acknowledge that. And then for what? You know what I'm saying? Like, if you don't humble yourself, then, you know, you're going to have a really shitty fucking life.
Oh, for sure.
You know,
I hate to say this, but it's the truth. And I know that I've kind of self-analyzed this, but I'm a person that needs that response from people. Like, I don't necessarily need the pat on the back, the good job, but I definitely need like something.
Oh, I do too. We were just talking about the other day. There's this, love language. What's your love language? And
what's love language?
It's like a thing where like what your language of love is. I'm sort of vague on it because I'm trying to remember what some of the things are. But one is like being recognized for something that you do.
Okay.
Like compliments. I think one's like, oh man, I can't remember what they all were. They're just like five things that basically you are gifts. You're like getting gifts. Like receiving a gift is like a love language. You feel loved from it by the person.
Okay.
Is one of them. And we did this huge test, and sure enough, one was like just being acknowledged for the things that you do.
Yeah.
Which, again, isn't a great thing. You know what I'm saying? But I want to. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know? And I know that. And so, like I said, I just got to put myself in check sometimes. Like, it's good to be, you know, proud and prideful of stuff, but sometimes it could be a negative thing, you know?
Oh, for sure.
It can drive you up the wall or, like I said, drive you in a plateau or you're doing tattoos that you think are like the bee's knees and you get shit on, and then you realize they weren't the bee's knees, you know?
Yeah. And I don't think that's just tattooing. I mean, that there's a lot of things that go into that. Anything that you're doing that, you know, you're just kind of half-assing, you're going to plateau regardless of like, if you think you're doing well.
Yeah.
Someone out there is doing it better.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you got to really keep yourself in check with that.
Well, sure. Once in a while, I have a little slow time, like 10, 15 minutes to shop, and I'll go to Shock Mansion. There is phenomenal artists on there that will post tattoo pictures, and I'm out there critiquing them. You know what I'm saying? Like, these guys will blow me out of the water, literally blow me out of the water. Like, things that I can't even comprehend on how they glazed over a highlight somewhere, you know, and made it look, you know, and I'm over there like, look at this over here, guys. You know, like,
yeah,
look at, you know, and again, and then I'm like, dude, what the fuck are you doing, dude? What the, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't know if it's my character or what. It's just like, full circle, Vegas, I needed it. As brutal as it was, as almost career ending as it was, it literally changed my whole life. Like I said, not just in tattooing, but just how I view life. Like I said, it's one of those things where I like to be told that, you know, you're doing a good job or something. But then again, it plays right into what just happened.
Yeah, you know? that need for approval is tough.
Yeah, it is tough. It's real bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm definitely there, though. I'm kind of one of those people that need that approval. And I'm not proud of it. It's definitely not something that, like, I'm stoked about that I need that approval. Yeah. And it's never so much as like, I don't need somebody to tell me necessarily that I'm doing good,
right,
or that whatever I did was good.
Right.
I just need that acknowledgement of like, okay, you did something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, well, here's the thing. I mean, even going deeper, it sounds so trivial and it sounds so petty, but even when I post something on Facebook, I'm like, oh fuck. You know, I found the flaws. I found something, you know, this and that, but I'm like, you know, pumped about it. You know what I'm saying? You post it on there and 67 likes and you're like, oh
yeah,
shit, okay, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you're like, fuck, what did I do wrong, you know? Or what did I do this, or was it the wrong time of day that I posted, or did I post it with this, or should I have posted it with this, or did I get the wrong lighting?
Yeah.
Or is this a shitty tattoo, you know? And it's like one of those things, like, I don't, it sounds, dude, but I don't know why I get a rise off of likes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's just,
that's rough too, because Facebook is such a beast in its own. With the analytics that's on it and the timing that is involved, you know, there's times a day that you need to post,
yes,
to get more likes. There's all these things that go into it that just don't make any sense, that don't give you a true value of what,
right,
you know. So a person like you, that you said you kind of live off those likes, that's right, hard, because it's a game at that point.
Right. And then I tell myself, why am I doing that? Like I said, every single day you post something and it gets attention and you're like, okay, good. You,
yeah,
know? And then the next one you post, you're like, well, shit. You know, and then you start analyzing why, like, not the aspect of like, what's wrong with the tattoo. You're like trying to make excuses.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, well, is it the wrong time of the day? Oh, this is more of a realistic tattoo. And, you know, ladies don't like this. So usually if I post something that ladies like, I get more likes for it or something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You start making excuses for it. And then it drives me up the wall afterwards. I'm like, again, I put myself in check 10,000 times a day. And it sucks, because then I'm like, I feel like I'm a terrible person. I'm like, I'm a piece of shit. I need to, like, again, humble myself and not focus on shit like that. But yeah, it's a, dude, Facebook is a monster.
It is. It really is a monster.
Facebook.
Social media in general, as much good as it's done for everybody, it's caused just as much harm.
Oh, you know, absolutely.
It's brought us all together, but it's also opened everybody up, and everybody expects to get these likes or,
yes,
whatever it may be.
Yes.
And like you say, you kind of almost are driven by that rather, yeah, than anything else.
Yeah. Well, I was reading this thing about Facebook. I can't remember where I was reading it. It was a post somewhere online, and it was basically talking about adrenaline rush.
Okay.
And it literally was, I don't know how they did the test, but they were literally gauging people's adrenaline off of Facebook posts, and they were spiking through the roof. Some people were getting adrenaline so high, they were considering it to a skydiver.
Holy shit.
And what happens is, just like that sports high, those guys that do those sports high, you know, they skydive, they need that high all the time, you know. They started getting used to it. And it started talking about these people wanting that same high. You know, they post something and they get 400 likes. And they're like, oh my gosh, your endorphins are going through the roof. Your adrenaline's going through the roof. And then you consistently do something like that and it drops off. You're like, I need that high. You know what I'm saying? And it was talking about that high on this article. And I was like, no way. This is crazy. Like I said, it turned into this whole different thing with Facebook. Yeah, it definitely, I mean, it helped us out tremendously in the beginning, you know, like for business, it's great. You know, you can post stuff on there. You can do all sorts of stuff on Facebook, but
yeah, it's great for that. I mean, it's because it's a free marketing tool.
Right. Absolutely.
It's free advertising.
Right. It's 100% free.
We shut down our website because it wasn't worth it.
Right.
You know, I don't know if you guys are still using yours, but we shut ours down because it wasn't worth it.
Yeah.
Because we drove so much traffic through Facebook.
Facebook. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So other stuff like Instagram came out, you know, and that's like a whole new thing. Dude, it's just craziness.
Instagram's hot right now, too. That's Instagram like the, that's the platform.
It's stupid hot. They did an article that a lot of people in certain age groups are actually leaving Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a lot of older people are staying on Facebook and a lot of the younger people are actually moving away from it. I read about that, too.
And where the fuck do we fall? I think we're in the middle somewhere. We're not old, but we're not young. I learn that every day.
Where do we fall?
Dude, I don't know. I see it every day, though, because I see the people that are older than us that I'm like, oh, we're not old like them. Yeah. And then the fucking 18-year-olds come in, and I'm like, I'm old.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I got all hot and sauced up when they came out with the dates for millennials and stuff. And
yeah, we're like right on the...
We're on the cusp.
Yeah,
the leading cusp. Somebody that I think created a little, like a 3-year gap.
Yeah.
On one of these websites. It was a total like hoax thing, but it took me for a second and I was like, yes.
Yes.
We're like in between both of those, you know?
Yeah. I heard, what was the one I heard the other day? Zennials?
Zennials.
So it's like, it's supposed to be our generation. It's like the gap between the Generation X.
Is that for real?
Well, they're supposed to, they say there's a Zennials, which is the gap between Generation X and Millennials.
Yeah.
Which I can only hope, because I would hate to be called a Millennial.
Dude, it sucks a little bit.
Yeah.
It sucks a little bit.
The only thing that I think is funny is, and I don't know how much you pay attention to like stand-up comedy, but Eliza Schlesserman just came out with a stand-up that's called Elder Millennial.
That's awesome.
And she talks about that because she's like the same age as we are.
That's
so
awesome.
She talks about being like an elder millennial.
That's awesome. Oh, wait a minute. That's the one, she's got blonde hair, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. She's talking
little
about,
dog Blanche.
Come over here, kitties.
Yeah.
And talking about, yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. That's her.
Yeah.
And she got her dog Blanche that she takes everywhere.
Yes. No, that was, she's awesome. We actually watched her the other day. No, she was, I had tears in my eyes. She was killing me.
Yeah, that's funny because like you said, I don't know where we fall with that stuff.
I don't know. It's just, I know how I feel about it. For some reason, something inside of me tells me that I don't want to be called a millennial. Why I don't want to be called a millennial, I don't really have a reason. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I don't know if it's just like hearing the Gen Xers either talk bad shit, you know what I'm saying? Or just how some of the attitudes are for some of the younger millennials. You're just like, oh man, it's just like both sides. You're just like, you're torn between, you know, so many things. And so I'm like, when it first came out, I was like, no, you know, no.
Yeah.
You know, 1983, you're just like right there. I'm like, why? And then I started thinking about it. I'm like, well, I mean, what's the big deal, you know? So
yeah, that's hard to say. I think my biggest thing with it was the attitudes that you see so many younger millennials have.
Oh, yeah.
And the way they think about things is just not the way that I was brought up to think. And I'm sure it's not the way you were brought up to think. We're just from a different generation, well, period.
What I've noticed is it's amazing to be a dreamer.
Yeah.
It's the best thing in the world to be a dreamer. But to be a dreamer and be realistic at the same time, there has to be some sort of like tangible realism to your dream. You know what I'm saying? Where like, well, I'm going to be the president of the United States.
Yeah.
You know, no, of course I'm not going to be the president of the United States. You know, I'm going to go be an astronaut. Of course I'm not going to be an astronaut. It's almost like the attitude is like where, you know, if I'm tattooing a guy and the guy comes in and he's like, oh man, you know, I'm going to, you know, you ask him, you know, what are you going to do in life? You're going to college. He says, no, I'm not going to go to college. And I'm like, okay, what are you going to do? They're like, I'm going to go be a volunteer off of the coast of California at some wildlife turtle reserve. And you're like, oh, like, you know, to do like be a biologist and stuff like that, or, you know, to be, you know, what are you going to do? And they're like, no, I'm just going to be, you know, and I'm just going to go over there. But I'm really pissed off right now because, you know, my mom, you know, living with my mom, and she won't pay me, you know, the money that I need to go down there and for the airline ticket. And you're like, okay, well, that's sort of understandable.
Yeah.
And then you're like, and then you realize, well, wait a minute, even as a volunteer, you have to have somewhat of a degree. And you tell them that, you're like, no, I'm just going to go down there and wing it. You know what I'm saying? And you're just like, dude, wake up. It's great to be a dreamer and stuff, but you have to be realistic about some goals too in life. You know,
yeah.
You just can't be like, oh, you know, I'm going to be a cosplayer my whole life. And then just tell your parents you're going to be moving to New York where cosplay capital of the world, and you're just like, I'm going to live with cosplayers, and you know, it's just the most unrealistic stuff, you know?
Yeah, one of the biggest things that I can remember hearing, and this isn't 100%, because, I mean, you talk about dreaming, but this is another thing. You get a lot of people that talk about, like, the positive self-talk. They want to talk themselves up so much. Yep. One of the best quotes I ever heard about this was from a guy named David Goggins. He is a ex-Navy SEAL, super inspirational, but he talks about, like, positive self-talk only works if you put in the work to make it right.
Right. 100%.
Like, yeah. You can tell yourself all day that you're going to be the best at something. You're going to, like you said, you're going to have these dreams. I'm going to be whatever it is.
Right.
But that's only going to come true if you actually put in the work to get there.
Yeah. You got to put in the grind.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Without the grind, you can dream all you want. You can dream in your mom's basement or your dad's basement all you want. You have to work. You have to put the time into it. Another thing that, you know, that I'm hearing with a lot of millennials is that they're expecting things out the bat.
Yeah.
They're coming into a work job and they're like, hey, dude, no, I want to get paid this. And you're like, no, dude, you start at the bottom and work your way up. You know?
Yeah.
And that's what I'm hearing a lot of things about, you know, people that own businesses are just like, dude, we can't pay these people what they want coming in because, you know, a lot of these guys as business owners started from the bottom, did washing dishes,
yeah,
you know, mail rooms, stuff like that, old traditional stuff, you know, and they worked their way up. And millennials are like, no, dude, we're going to walk into a place, you know, and I'm going to be like, I'm going to get paid this. I'm going to be sitting in this place. You know what I'm saying? Already, like, again, I don't want to use the word dreaming, but they're like dreaming stuff that's not a reality. You know
yeah.
what I'm saying? You have to have some sort of be realistic about something and then put the work in. Yeah, you can have that corner office, but you start at the mailroom and you work your way up 6-7 years later, you're there, you know
yeah.
what I'm saying? Or 10 or 20, you know, whatever. But without that, you know, so I don't know if that's why I guess my mindset's different, you know, about, you know, working and stuff like that, that maybe I don't want to be clumped in with millennials.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, I know a lot of millennials that bust ass, a lot of millennials, a lot, especially in the area we're at, you know. Are, you know, even though we're at the very edge of Indiana, Michigan, you know, state line, we have a lot of farmers.
Yeah.
We have a lot of farming kids. And those guys bust ass.
But the ones that I know, as far as that go, definitely do not want to self-identify as millennials.
Oh, right.
I've definitely heard that before.
No, 100%. Well, usually that's how it is. If it's anybody that just works really hard, you know, puts in their time, they don't want to be a millennial whatsoever. They're actually pretty upset about it.
Yeah, definitely. I'm totally not ignoring you. I'm checking out election results as we speak. With a third of the election results in, Prop 1 is 60-40, yes. So that's good.
That is good.
I don't even know why I'm that worried about that, but I've been checking that all night.
Well, like I said, I mean, I voted yes. Like I said, it's just one of those things where it's going to help out. I believe it's going to help out law enforcement, and it's going to help out the state. You know
yeah.
what I'm saying? It's going to be... They're going to divert their attention to serious, serious stuff. We're talking with another police officer, and I don't know if I'm just living in a bubble, but heroin's a huge thing in this area.
No, it is. It's a huge thing.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a huge thing.
It's massive.
Meth is, too. Meth is really
yeah,
bad.
Meth is huge, yeah. too. And again, well, I don't know what bubble I'm living in, and they're telling me about all these things, and I'm like, what? What are you talking about? They're like, yeah, dude, heroin and meth are huge. And then again, they're talking about busting some dude with, you know, I don't know much about weed, but like, you know, a pound of weed. And you're just like, and you can just tell they're just like, what a waste of time. You know what I'm saying? Just
yeah.
Like, we can divert our attention to some serious shit. You know what I'm saying? Stuff that's really affecting people's lives. Like, because with the whole prescription medication thing, you know, I was talking to a doctor and I was tattooing and he was like, that's basically what caused everything.
Yeah.
He goes, you know, back in the day, we were just. Doctors were just left and right. I mean, I remember going to the doctor and they're like, oh, well, here's a 3-pack sample of Vicodin. And you're just like, okay, I'll take it. You know, without even batting an eye.
Yeah. We had a doctor locally that was just like that. You would go in and you'd say, oh, my back hurts. I think I need Vicodin. Okay.
Yeah.
He'd write you a script for Vicodin. He wouldn't even check you. He wouldn't do it. You know, he wouldn't. All you had to do was tell him you wanted it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I could definitely see how that's caused a huge problem.
Yeah. 2014, I got in a motorcycle accident and I broke so many bones. I left the hospital and no joke, I believe I got 3 bottles, 30 count of Percocets.
That's craziness.
Right. And I was out of it. I was just coming out of the hospital and I didn't like how I felt on them. I probably had 10 or 12 and then I was like, I'm done with these. But here, so all of a sudden, everybody locks everything up.
Yeah.
No more Percocets, no more Vicodins, no more all that crazy shit. You know what I'm saying? Well, guess what comes next? So then they start buying things like a Percocet or whatever for $10, $15, $20 a piece. And they're like, I can't keep this habit up because I can't afford it.
Yeah.
But then what comes next? Heroin, which is substantially cheaper. You know what I'm saying? And they can get it. But then all of a sudden you're losing your job because you can't stay awake at work, or you're not making it to work because you're passed out in bed or whatever. And it turned into this massive epidemic. And like, again, I'm just like in a bubble because I'm just, you know, and then all of a sudden I realized that it's massive in the area.
Yeah.
It's happening all over the place. And like I said, back to Prop 1, you're just like, okay, yeah, get it out. What's the big deal? It's going to make the state, I believe it's going to make the state more secure financially. And then again, it's going to, the attention of police officers is going to go a whole different direction.
No, for sure.
You know, so, and like I said, more business is going to pop up, you know, either selling weed or marijuana. You can edibles, you know, bakeries are going to pop up. I just saw a show about cooking using marijuana.
Yeah, there's a show on Netflix, right?
Yeah.
It's called like...
Yeah, they cook with marijuana. Like, I guess you can't even taste it. But again, it's the market's huge, I think. You know, even using tinctures, I heard people talking about using tinctures and stuff like that. And then I saw another article about using it just for seizures.
Yeah.
It was a huge thing. I remember there was a little boy that had seizures. They gave him, he wasn't smoking weed. They just gave him like a tincture with THC in it, and it literally took his seizures away. And it blew up because the parents were giving him marijuana.
Yeah.
And they were terrible parents. He doesn't have any more seizures. And just like anything, just like drinking alcohol, if you don't drink alcohol, the first two or three beers are going to give you a great buzz.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? But over time, you build a tolerance. That boy's going to build up a tolerance to the point where like it's not even going to bother him anymore. Just like taking a Percocet.
Yep.
I sat in bed and everything was like Charlie Brown around me. Sarah's talking to me and I'm like, where am I? You know what I'm saying? And that's a regulated prescription medication. So I think it's going to be good. I think one needs to be legalized here. It's going to help the economy. I hope our roads are going to be taken care of.
Yeah, that would be nice because our roads are terrible, dude, here.
I mean, it's bad. It's bad. When I almost face plant my steering wheel because I hit a pothole in my truck, you know.
Speaking of roads, you said you got in an accident in 2014.
Yeah.
What happened with that?
So I was coming home. It was late night, 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm coming off of 31, turned on 12,
okay,
right into Niles. And I look down and I'm going 60 miles an hour and I look back up and there's a tiny little deer, tiny in the middle of the road. I started locking up my back brake because on a motorcycle, you definitely want to use the back brake first. Use the front one. You're just going to go down.
Yeah.
So I start locking up my back brake and trying to figure out which way this deer is going to go. Well, I don't know if you know deer and roads. Those guys have zero traction.
Yeah.
So I start taking it to the right. Well, he looks like he's going to, or he, she, whatever, is either going to the right and immediately decides to go the opposite way. So I turn and the deer hit just the edge of my handlebar. And I think it was on my throttle side and it revved it up. I think I popped a wheelie. I went down and all I could think about, my adrenaline was raging. Dude, when people say, it's slow motion. Slow motion. It is legitimately slow motion. It felt like 2 solid minutes what happened in 20 seconds. You know, I was tumbling. I was trying to tuck my hands into my chest, but from just spinning, my hands would flip out and they slapped the road. And I got up and my visor was broken. My gloves were, one of my shoes was gone. As a tattoo artist, your hands are everything.
Yeah.
And I closed my left hand, I find, and I closed my right hand, and I can't close it. Or I can close it partially.
Yeah.
So I ripped my glove off, and my pinky finger is half as short. It went to the side and kicked down.
Oh.
So as a freak thing, I grabbed it just nervously and pulled it back together, which was, it was so painful. So then I'm like, I feel good. I'm all right. I see the motorcycle. The light's still on it. It's off, but it's on. I lift it up. And I'm praying because I'm literally 3 blocks away from the house. I'm praying that it starts. I turn the key and it starts. And I'm like, thank you, Jesus. And so I grab the handlebar and I sort of smash it to where it's supposed to be. It wasn't holding at all, but I could sort of still turn the throttle from it. So I'm like, if I can make it home, I'll be fine. I keep telling myself, if I make it home, I'll be fine. If I make it home, I'll be fine. So I'm driving and there's one stoplight and then you go down to M139 11th Street, and then you go back home. So I'm at the stoplight, and somebody must have called the police because they saw it. And sure enough, Bering County comes up to the opposite side of the stoplight, and they turn around. They're like, "Don't go anywhere. And it was actually a couple of buddies of mine that I tattoo. They're like, what happened, you know? And they got the stuff, the information from the other guy. And they were just asking me if I was okay. And I was fine. And Nick, which is one of the police officers, called Sarah. Because Sarah at the time was working at the hospital. Or at the, I'm sorry, at the jail as a nurse.
Okay.
And he's like, I'm going to call Sarah. I'm like, yeah. And Charlie was just born. I mean, she was probably maybe 7 or 8 months old. And he's like, I'm going to call Sarah. I'm going to call Sarah. And it's so late, man. I'm looking at my coat. I had a coat on, a sweatshirt on, and then two shirts on, and it wore all the way almost down to bare skin from, yeah, from sliding. And it, and my helmet looked like Babe Ruth got a bat and just beat the shit out of it. Like, it was so bad. So they call Sarah, and I told the guys, I'm standing up the whole time, and I tell the guys, I'm like, I'm just going to lay down for a second. Like, something's not right. So I lay down, ambulance shows up, and I couldn't move. The adrenaline went completely out of my body, and they're like, don't move, don't worry about it. Something might be wrong with your back. Just lay on this, you know, they put me on the board with the whole foamy neck thing. Take me to the hospital. And I get to the hospital. Sarah meets me there as we're coming in, you know. And, you know, they gave me some, I've never in my life had morphine. Never in my life.
Yeah.
And they gave me morphine. And it was like, I was on fire for a second. And then I was like, holy fucking shit, what the fuck is this? I even told a doctor, I'm like, don't give this to me again.
Yeah.
I don't want it again. So Sarah walks in there, and again, she used to work at Memorial Hospital. That's why I went. And she's just like, you know, like, hey, you know, how you guys doing? She's talking to people that she knows, and I'm there. And you can tell she just like sort of got like informed of what's going on, and everything was okay, you know. And there's a guy picking dirt out of my knees with a hemostat. And I'm still on morphine, by the way. And she comes over and leans over with Charlie. Again, baby. And yeah, she's like, he's like, hi, baby, are you doing okay? And I was like, yeah, babe, you know, I'm feeling so good. I'm like, yeah, honey, I'm doing great. You know, she's like, are you going to sell the motorcycle? And I was like, dude, I do one of these. I go, no, just like that. And the second I did that, I don't know if she winked at the guy taking the dirt out, but the guy was digging for gold after that. Like, I felt it on morphine. It was like either the guy was just like being compassionate to her side. He's like, I'm going to make sure this guy remembers never to ride this motorcycle again. But needless to say, I've never broke a bone in my body. And that day I broke 9.
Holy cow.
I broke my collarbone, broke my back, broke 4 ribs, broke my foot, my pinky. I broke so much stuff, man. It took two months of a turtle shell, which is, by the way, dude, fuck waterboarding. Dude, get it? If we have terrorist issues, put them in a turtle shell.
Yeah.
That, dude, it is like the worst thing ever. You can't sit. You sit down, it slides up and chokes you out, literally. You can't lay right. You can't, you know, if you're like one of those people that just toss and turn in at night, it's the most miserable thing on earth. But yeah, it was an experience, you know. I still feel it today. My
That's
back
craziness.
Hurts a little bit. I have to sit with my chair like leaning into the backrest at the shop, you know.
Yeah.
You know, once in a while. I had surgery on my collarbone that had put it back together. And you can feel that too.
Oh,
you know?
That's miserable.
Yeah. So it's one of those experiences where it just reminds you every day not to be a dick and just don't be stupid with life.
I've got a funny broken bone story. It's funny. It's not nearly that dramatic or life threatening. Right now I have a broken tailbone.
Right now?
Right now. About a week ago.
What?
The alarm in my house goes off at 3:30 in the morning. Right. I jump up. It's a 2-story house. I jump up. I grab my gun. I get to the top of the stairs, and I'm looking down the stairs, and I can see the front door. Front door's shut. It's locked. I'm like, all right, that's taken care of. I start down the stairs. About halfway down the stairs, the wall stops, and there's the banister starts. You can look right there. You can see through my laundry room to the door that goes out to the garage. And I look over, and I'm like, all right, that door looks like it's closed. And that is the last thing I remember on the stairs.
No way.
I fell the rest of the way down the fucking stairs on my ass, just
hitting every single one.
Every stair on the way down. Immediately jump up, run the rest of the way through the house.
Wait, you committed after the fact?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah.
I would have laid on the floor.
Jumped up, ran the rest of the way through the house, checking. Total false alarm, like the most ridiculous false alarm I've ever seen. Our fire alarm is connected to our security system.
Oh.
And it detected critically low temperatures, which I didn't even know was a thing. But it detected critically low temperatures, set our alarm off. So I'm running through the house like an asshole. But after this is all said and done, my wife is standing at the top of the stairs, just kind of snickering to herself. She's like, did you fall down the stairs? I'm like, No, that was a tactical slide.
Yeah, that was. Yeah, well, hey, like I said, you got up and committed to the rest of it, because I would have been like, dude, what is it about noises in the house?
Yeah.
And like, dude, when Sarah's like, Charles, I heard, did you hear that? And so I have, right at the edge of my bed, I have my Glock, and I have it on this, I don't know if you've seen it, it's like this really cool little magnet. It was on Facebook. I got it on Facebook. It's like basically, it fits right on the slide, and you can, it sticks to the slide, and you can actually rack it. You can actually chamber it.
Oh, from nice. That,
yeah. So I get, do the same thing, you know, just looking around, and I have to go through every room.
Yeah.
Like, I have to open the shower curtain. You know what I'm saying? Like, I have to go downstairs in the laundry room. There's only one way in. And there's a little, you know, every single closet has to be opened.
Yep.
Then 45 minutes later, you know, like, you're like, okay, back to bed, you know?
Yeah.
And it, but, you know, the dog barks in the middle of 3 a.m, you're like, okay, get up and do the routine again. I don't know what it is.
I had one the other day. So this was maybe 3-4 months ago. The alarm went off. My wife didn't latch one of the doors and the door blew open in the middle of the night.
Oh,
set
really?
The alarm off. But again, you know, I'm freaking out.
That's a good one to freak out about.
So I jump up, run downstairs. The moment I get downstairs, I realize I didn't get my gun. So I'm like, in my head, I'm like, what the, am I going to fight this guy in my underwear? Like, what am I going to, here we go.
Yeah, let's do this.
Luckily, it was nothing. But yeah, that was totally my thought. I was like, oh, I'm going to do some underwear kung fu here in a minute. And such is life.
At that point, you know, just freak him out. It's like a shock thing. Just, you know, get naked and just start chasing him. You know, he'll be the guy in prison being like, or jail being like, dude, I got chased. I broke into a house one time and somebody chased me out butt fucking naked. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's one of those things, you know, I'd definitely run from if I was a home invader.
What TJ was making fun of me. TJ Lucas, he was on episode 6 of the show, but he was making fun of me about it. He said, man, if someone did break into your house and you fell on the stairs, they couldn't have done anything. They'd have been laughing too hard.
Yeah, they would have been laughing too hard. They would have been like, almost like, are you okay? But yeah.
Shit, did that really just happen?
Yeah.
So Chuck, we kind of touched on a lot of topics tonight. It was been a lot of fun. I'm going to ask you the same question I ask everybody else to close out a show. If you had any advice to give anybody going through something, whether it's being really broken down by an outside source, kind of like you were, mm-hmm. or whatever it may be, going through a life-altering accident, whatever it may be, what advice would you give them?
This sounds super cliche. Just, again, be humble and be compassionate and kind. You know what I'm saying? It's, you know, nowadays it's just everybody's angry. Everybody's got to be somewhere. Just a smile and check your pride when you walk out. You know, just try your best to be as humble as possible throughout the day. It's helped me a lot. It's helped me who I am. And, you know, every time we go anywhere with the kids, I'm like, become compassionate and kind. You know, you say thank yous and pleases and you're polite and you're opening doors and you're doing everything you possibly can to instill it now. Because at the end, dude, it's just your character it's what really shines to other people, you know. And so that's, like, I guess, the best thing I could say.
That's a great place to end it, man.
Thanks, man.
Anybody wants to see your work, see what you do, how can they find you?
We have our stuff on the website at theparlortattoo.com, and we also just have, it hasn't been updated yet, but we have some stuff on our Facebook page at The Parlor Tattoo.
Okay, awesome. Chuck, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks, man. Just to show you
had to check me to see what you're
I was like, yep.
Yeah, is that right?
Yes, right. Yeah. You know how much I use Instagram.
Awesome.